Welcome to the Deep Dive. Today we are diving into the future of energy.
Ooh, exciting.
Yeah, so it looks like you sent us a ton of research and articles all about the future of energy. So
You're looking for a crystal ball, huh?
basically, we're going to try to see what's coming next in
In this electrifying field.
Yeah,
I see what you did there.
I couldn't resist.
Now.
The energy landscape is transforming so quickly these days, and
It's more than just new power sources, right?
exactly. It's a fundamental shift in how we think about energy, like
Like we're changing the rules of the game.
exactly.
Okay, so let's get into it. The energy war that you sent over it paints this picture of electricity becoming the new.
Currency of power.
Yes. It argues that just like oil was everything in the 20th century.
Electricity is going to be the key to global power in the 21st century.
Right. And it's not just.
Keeping the lights on anymore. It's about who has the power to power everything.
Right. It's about like.
Who controls the cleanest and most efficient sources of electricity?
And that puts them in a very powerful position globally.
Yeah, it's a really different way to look at energy. And the energy war had some really interesting statistics in there.
Like what?
Like by 2034, AI alone could use something like 15% of global electricity.
Wow.
And electric vehicles could use another 10% on top of
So
that.
that's like adding all the electricity that China uses today just from those two things.
Yeah, and from what I'm seeing in these sources, renewables are going to be the main source for all this new electricity demand.
Like solar and wind.
Especially. They're going to be like the backbone of the future energy system.
That's great.
Yeah. I've been reading about all these incredible new solar technologies like perovskite solar
Oh,
cells
yeah, those are amazing.
and bifacial panels and even floating solar farms.
Yeah.
What makes these perovskite solar cells so special?
Well, they're potentially cheaper and easier to make than the typical silicon solar cells,
Okay.
but they can reach the same efficiency levels or even higher
Yeah, so it could really bring the cost of solar down.
globally
Yeah.
and really change who has access to clean energy.
Yeah, it's amazing.
It really could be a game
In
changer.
a lot of places, solar is already cheaper than fossil fuels, which is pretty amazing.
It is.
What about wind power? It feels like I see wind turbines popping up everywhere.
Yeah, on land and offshore, right?
Yeah.
Well, wind is definitely another huge player in this renewable energy revolution. And what's really cool is offshore wind.
Okay.
The sheer scale of it is amazing. Like, it could theoretically generate more electricity than the entire world uses today,
Just from offshore.
just from offshore wind farms.
Wow. Okay. So with solar and wind becoming so big, what happens to hydroelectric power?
Well, it will still be important, especially in places where the geography and water resources are good. But there are limitations. You have environmental concerns, and climate change is affecting water availability.
Yeah.
Like dams can disrupt ecosystems, and droughts can really reduce the energy output of
Makes
dams.
sense. You know what else really stood out to me in this research? Marine energy. I had no idea the ocean had so much power just waiting to be tapped.
It's kind of mind-blowing, right?
Yeah, it almost seems too good to be true.
Yeah, you're right. It really makes you realize just how much potential energy is out there in nature.
Right.
We often take it for granted. The research that you sent over talks about three main types of marine energy. There's wave energy,
Okay.
tidal energy, and ocean thermal energy conversion, or OTEC.
OTEC, okay.
And each one harnesses the ocean's power differently.
I was reading that wave energy alone could generate almost as much electricity as we use in the whole world today.
Yeah, isn't that amazing?
Yeah, how do they even capture energy from waves?
There are a few ways oscillating water columns use the up and down motion of waves
Okay.
to push air through a turbine and make electricity. And another method uses things called attenuators.
Attenuators.
Yeah, they're these long floating structures that capture energy from the back and forth movement of waves
Oh, wow.
across the surface.
Okay, so then there's tidal energy. And since tides are predictable, that must make it a really reliable energy source.
Yeah, it's like clockwork, basically.
Okay.
And tidal stream generators are one way to harness this power.
How does it work?
They work kind of like underwater wind turbines
Okay.
placed in areas with strong tidal currents.
Oh, interesting. So is this just a futuristic concept, or are there actual tidal power plants?
Well, there's the La Rance power station in France. It's been operating since 1966.
Oh.
So it's a very real and proven technology.
Wow. Okay. And then OTEC.
Yeah.
That sounds pretty futuristic.
It does, but it's based on a fairly simple idea.
Okay.
It uses the temperature difference between the warm surface water and the cold deep water to make power, and it's especially promising in tropical regions
Okay.
because they have bigger temperature differences between these water layers.
It's amazing all this potential energy just out there.
Yeah.
So why aren't there more marine energy projects happening already?
Well, there are a few challenges. The technology is still being developed, and deploying and maintaining these systems in the ocean can be really expensive.
Right.
Plus, there are environmental concerns. We have to carefully study how these systems could impact marine life.
Yeah, that makes sense.
But I think as technology improves and we understand how to integrate these systems in a sustainable way, we'll see a lot more marine energy projects in the future.
So it's definitely a sector to watch.
Definitely.
Another surprising thing I found in the research was ammonia.
Ammonia?
Yeah.
As an energy source.
Yeah. Like the stuff in fertilizer.
Right?
I never would have thought of that.
It's not the first thing that comes to mind.
No, but they're exploring it as a carbon-free fuel and energy carrier. And what's interesting is that you can make it from seawater using renewable energy.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
How does that work?
So first you use electrolysis, powered by renewables like solar or wind, to split seawater into hydrogen and oxygen.
Okay.
Then you combine that hydrogen with nitrogen from the air to create ammonia. It sounds complicated.
Yeah.
What makes ammonia so good as an energy source?
Well, first of all, it's carbon-free when used as fuel.
Okay.
It's also really energy dense, so easy to store and transport.
So we could use the existing infrastructure.
Exactly, like pipelines and tankers originally designed for natural gas.
So we wouldn't have to start from scratch?
Yeah.
That would help keep costs down, I imagine.
Right.
And the research also mentioned that it's very versatile.
Yeah. You can use it directly in power plants or as a hydrogen carrier.
Oh, wow. It's like a multi-tool of clean energy.
Exactly.
So are there any real-world examples of ammonia being used this way?
Yeah, there's a green ammonia plant already running in Norway.
Okay.
And a big project happening in Morocco.
Wow.
Where they're using wind and solar power to make ammonia from desalinated seawater.
So it's not just theoretical.
No, it's becoming a reality.
That's great. So we've talked about solar, wind, marine energy, even ammonia.
Yeah.
What about geothermal energy?
Oh, it definitely has a place in this future energy landscape. It uses the heat from within the earth and is already a major source of energy in places like Rotorua, New Zealand, and Iceland.
Uh-huh.
And with all these new technologies emerging, it could expand to many other regions too.
Like what kind of technologies?
Well, one of the most promising is deep drilling.
Okay.
And enhanced geothermal systems, or EGS.
Okay.
It's basically creating man-made geothermal reservoirs.
Oh, wow.
They drill deep into hot rocks,
mm.
and then they inject water to create steam to drive turbines.
So they make their own geothermal hotspots.
Exactly.
That's pretty amazing.
And there's even research into this concept called supercritical geothermal, which could produce 10 times the energy output of conventional systems.
Wow, that's amazing.
It really is.
It's incredible how technology is really pushing the limits of clean energy.
Yeah, it is.
It's really exciting to see all these different renewable energy sources taking off. But what about nuclear power?
Right.
Where does it fit into all of this?
Well, nuclear has historically been a source of low carbon electricity, but it's had some challenges like high costs, public perception, and waste management.
Right.
However, there's a lot of interest in a new type of reactor called small modular reactors, or SMRs.
SMRs?
Yeah.
What are those, and how are they different from traditional nuclear power plants?
Well, they're much smaller than traditional reactors.
Okay.
And this means lower costs, faster construction, and potentially even better safety features.
Okay.
And they're also more flexible.
In what way?
In terms of where and how you can use them.
Oh, okay. So they're like a more appropriate size for nuclear power.
Yeah, you could put it that way.
Okay.
And the research mentions a few SMR projects that are already underway.
Oh, really?
Like Nuscale in the U.S. and Rolls-Royce in the U.K.
Wow. So nuclear power could be making a comeback.
Yeah, but in a new form.
Right. But there are still those worries about waste and public perception, right?
Those are definitely valid concerns that need to be addressed. But the development of SMRs is a big change for the nuclear industry. So it's definitely a technology to watch.
So we've got all these great ways to generate clean energy, but what happens when the sun isn't shining or the wind isn't blowing?
Right.
How do we make sure the power is always on with renewables?
That's where energy storage comes in.
Okay.
It's super important for making renewables work on a big scale.
So we need a way to store all that extra energy.
Oh, it's abundant.
Right, and then release it when we need it.
Yeah, it's like having a giant battery for the whole power grid.
Okay. What are some of the best energy storage technologies out there?
Well, batteries are probably the most well-known.
Okay.
Lithium-ion batteries are the most common now, but there's a lot of excitement about solid-state batteries.
What are those?
they have even more potential for energy density safety and how long they last.
Okay.
And for storing large amounts of energy over a long time, flow batteries are looking really promising.
So different types of batteries for different situations.
Exactly. And what about storage options that aren't batteries?
Oh, yeah. What else is there?
Well, green hydrogen made using renewable energy is another great option.
Oh, yeah.
You store the hydrogen and convert it back to electricity when you need it.
Okay.
And there's also pumped hydro.
Pumped hydro?
Yeah. It's a well-established technology that uses the potential energy of water.
How does that work?
You pump water uphill to a reservoir when you have extra energy, and then release it downhill through turbines to make electricity when you need more.
Oh, that's smart.
And there's a lot of innovation happening in energy storage, like thermal energy storage.
Okay.
Which captures heat or cold to use later.
Wow.
And then there are some really cool new concepts like gravity-based storage.
Gravity-based?
Yeah. Imagine lifting and lowering massive weights to store and release energy.
Wow.
And liquid air energy storage, which uses compressed air.
Wow.
It's amazing all the different ways we can store energy.
It really is.
It shows just how complex and dynamic the shift to clean energy is.
Yeah, it's not just swapping out one energy source for another.
It's a complete system transformation.
You're totally right. This transition requires us to rethink how we do everything with energy, from making it to storing it to using it.
It's a big challenge, but also really exciting.
Yeah, and we've got the technology and the knowledge to make a truly sustainable energy system.
We do, but technology alone isn't enough.
What else do we need?
We need policies and investments to speed up this transition and make sure these technologies are widely used, and that's where governments and the private sector play a huge role.
Okay, so it's not just about scientists and engineers making breakthroughs in the lab. It's about creating the right environment for these technologies to thrive.
Exactly.
So what are some of those policies and investments that can really move this clean energy transition forward?
Well, governments have a few tools they can use to speed things up, like subsidies and tax incentives.
Right.
Those can make renewable energy projects more attractive financially, like the U.S. Inflation Reduction Act that we talked about before. It has billions of dollars in tax credits for clean energy production, energy efficiency upgrades, and electric vehicles.
So that kind of approach can really boost investment in the clean energy sector.
Yeah, a comprehensive approach like that can make a big difference. Are there any international examples of policies that are working really well?
That's a good question.
Well, a lot of people point to Germany's Energiewende as a model for how to transition to a system based on renewables.
Okay.
They've been phasing out nuclear power and investing heavily in solar and wind, and they have a strong system of feed-in tariffs.
What are those?
They basically guarantee a fixed price for renewable energy producers.
Oh.
So that creates a stable market and encourages growth.
So it's about creating the right conditions for clean energy to compete with fossil fuels.
Exactly. And it's really interesting to see how different countries are tackling this energy transition. But what about the private sector?
Yeah. What role are businesses and investors playing in all of this?
Well, they're absolutely crucial. We're seeing a lot of venture capital going into clean energy startups that are developing really cutting edge technologies.
Like what?
Everything from advanced batteries to next generation solar panels.
Wow.
And big companies are making commitments to reduce their carbon footprint.
Uh-huh.
So they're investing in renewable energy projects and adopting more sustainable practices.
That's great.
Yeah. And there's a growing market for green bonds.
Green bonds.
Yeah. They're specifically designed to finance projects that have environmental benefits.
Oh, that's really interesting. It seems like there's a lot of positive momentum building around this clean energy transition.
Yeah, from governments and the private sector.
It feels like a real turning point. So with all these advancements in technology and policy, what do you think? What's the energy mix going to look like 10 years from now in 2034?
Well, based on all the research you sent over, it's pretty clear that renewables are going to be the main source of energy in 2034. We could see solar and wind providing at least 70% of global electricity. But it's not going to be a one-size-fits-all solution.
Okay.
Different regions will use the resources they have available.
Mm-hmm.
So places with lots of sunshine will focus on solar, and windy coastal regions will use offshore wind farms.
So a more diverse and decentralized energy system.
Exactly. And what about the other technologies we talked about, like geothermal marine energy and nuclear?
Yeah. Will they have a place in this future energy mix?
Definitely. They'll be key players in this new energy landscape.
Okay.
Geothermal energy is expected to make a big contribution, especially with advancements in deep drilling and EGS.
Right.
It's a reliable energy source that can provide baseload power. And as for marine energy, while it might not be huge by 2034, it has tons of potential as the technology gets better and costs come down. We could see wave and tidal energy farms playing a bigger role, particularly in coastal areas.
Okay, what about nuclear power? Do you think SMRs will be a significant part of the energy mix in the next decade?
That's a tough one. It really depends on how the nuclear industry handles those concerns about safety waste disposal and public perception.
Right.
If they can prove that SMRs are cost-effective and safe, they could definitely contribute to a low-carbon future, especially in places where renewable energy isn't as readily available.
So the energy mix in 2034 is going to be a mix of different technologies, each playing a role based on what's available in each region and how technology develops.
Yeah, that's right. But this shift from fossil fuels to renewables, it's not just a technological shift, right?
Right.
What kind of geopolitical implications might this energy transition have?
Yeah, that's a good question.
This energy transformation is definitely going to reshape the world stage. Countries with abundant renewable resources like strong sunshine, consistent winds, or geothermal hotspots, they're going to be in a much stronger position.
Uh-huh.
They can become major energy exporters, providing clean energy to the rest of the world.
So like how oil-rich nations had all the power in the 20th century?
There are definitely similarities and, you know, control over important energy resources equals economic and political influence.
Right.
But it's not just about the resources themselves.
Okay.
It's also about technological leadership.
Uh-huh.
The countries that lead in things like battery technology, smart grids, and energy storage solutions, they're going to have a real advantage.
So it's not just who makes the energy, but who controls the whole system, from generation to storage to distribution.
Exactly. It's a complex power dynamic, and it'll be really interesting to see how these shifts in energy production and technology change global alliances, trade routes, and power structures.
This deep dive has been really eye-opening.
It has.
It's made me realize just how complex and how much potential this energy transition has.
Yeah.
So what are some of the key takeaways for our listeners as we move forward? What's the so what of all of this?
Well, the most important thing to remember is that the world of energy is changing in a big way. The way we make use and move energy is going to be completely different in the years to come.
Yeah, and it's already happening.
It is, and it's going to speed up really quickly.
Right, and it's not just about climate change.
No, it's about economic opportunity, energy security, and making a fairer energy system for everyone.
It's a huge challenge, but also a huge opportunity. It feels like we're at the start of a new era, not just for energy, but for how we live and interact with the world.
I completely agree. This is a defining moment.
It is.
It's up to all of us to understand these changes, to talk about them, and to find our own ways to contribute to this new energy future.
So what does all this mean for our listener who's been with us on this deep dive into the future of energy?
Well, the key thing is to realize that this energy transformation is not just something happening out there. It's going to affect every part of our lives.
Okay.
From how we power our homes and businesses to global politics and the technologies we use every day, this energy transition is going to have huge implications.
It is a lot to think about.
It is.
But it's also kind of empowering.
Oh, yeah. How so?
Well, it means we're not just watching this happen. We can actually be a part of shaping this new energy future, right?
Absolutely. This isn't just about governments and big companies making decisions. Individuals have power, too.
Right. Even small changes can add up.
Exactly.
Like, what can people do to be a part of this energy transition?
Well, think about the choices you make every day.
Okay.
How you get around what you buy, how you use energy at home.
Uh-huh.
Things like choosing energy-efficient appliances, switching to an electric vehicle, installing solar panels on your roof.
Right.
All those things can lower your carbon footprint and support the clean energy market.
Those are all things people can do.
Right. But it's not just about individual actions. It's also about coming together and speaking up.
That's a good point.
Informed citizens can really push for change.
Right.
Things like getting involved in local politics, supporting pro-environment policies, advocating for more investment in renewable energy, holding our leaders accountable.
Yeah.
All of that can create a better environment for clean energy to grow.
So we're not just using energy, we're actively creating the energy future.
Exactly. It's a team effort.
It is.
It takes individuals, communities, businesses, and governments working together to build a truly sustainable and fair energy system for everyone.
This deep dive has been incredible. It's really opened my eyes to the complexity and the possibilities of this whole energy transition.
Yeah, it's amazing what's happening.
We covered so much from the rise of renewables and the incredible potential of marine energy to the global implications of this energy shift. We even talked about ammonia as a clean energy source. Who knew? It feels like I've gotten a crash course in the future of energy.
It's a field that's changing all the time.
It is.
It's been great exploring it with you and our listener today.
Before we go, I wanted to leave our listener with one last thought.
Okay.
We talked about all the exciting technologies, the policy changes, the economic impacts.
Mm-hmm.
But what about the human side of things?
Oh, that's interesting.
What role will our behavior, social change, and even our values play in shaping the energy future?
That's a great question. You know, technology is just one piece of the puzzle. We also need to look at our own consumption habits, our relationship with energy, and what we want for the future.
Uh-huh.
It's about asking ourselves, what kind of world do we want to live in, and how does energy fit into that vision?
It's a good reminder that this energy transition is about so much more than just kilowatts and gigawatts. It's about our values, our choices, and the future we're building together.
Couldn't have said it better myself.
Well, a huge thank you to our expert for taking us on this journey through this complex and fascinating world of energy.
You're welcome.
Your insights have been so helpful.
It was my pleasure.
And to our listener, thank you for joining us on this deep dive into the future of energy. We hope you found it informative, thought-provoking, and maybe even a little inspiring.
I hope so, too.
Remember, the future of energy is not set in stone. It's something we're all creating together.